You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certifications and how we'll get you there. In this episode, we're diving into the tech industry's dynamic journey, exploring varied roles of PMs and sharing real-world experiences. Discover the secrets to successful transitions, building a strong professional community, and the standout skills needed in this dynamic landscape. Plus, join our exclusive Fireside Chat series featuring Osman Kock, co-founder and CEO at UserGuiding. Gain insights into the CEO role, its challenges, and personal experiences shaping their journey. Tune in for an episode brimming with inspiration and actionable insights. Let's dive in.
Hey, Osman. Hey, everyone. My name is Carlos. I'm the founder and CEO at Product School. Today, I'm here with another founder and CEO. His name is Osman Kock, and he works at UserGuiding. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Maybe we can start from the top. Why don't you give us the 10-second high-level pitch on UserGuiding?
Cool. Guiding is a product adoption platform. We help product companies, product people to improve their important metrics like conversion or retention rate. And we are working with almost 1,000 companies from 80 different countries.
All right. I like that. I'm sure that wasn't easy and that wasn't quick either. So I want to explore your journey first.
Yeah.
Osman just said that another fun fact is you are not based in Silicon Valley, right?
Yes. I have spent almost 2 years in Silicon Valley, mostly in San Francisco, but I am in London right now.
And I love that. I think there is still a misconception around high tech or has to be built in Silicon Valley. Even now that obviously there's more flexibility and hybrid or remote companies. And I love that your story and your success case and how you can build team, you can build a product outside Silicon Valley, in this case, London. I know you've traveled around the world, Turkey, Brazil, and still serve a global audience, including the US market.
Yeah. Happy to talk about it. Carlos, I remember I tweeted about Silicon Valley. I said that Silicon Valley is not a location, it's a time zone. I think it's all about the shared time zone that you are in touch. You are in touch with people. Yeah, it was 6 years ago, and yeah, we were having some tailor-made businesses for other companies with my existing current co-founder, Matt, and we were helping entrepreneurs to build their first products, and onboarding was a pain in the ass, but we were not sure how big is the problem. Then we decided to go to San Francisco. It was 2017 to see people, what's going on there. I was in San Francisco for a few times before. Then we noticed that the onboarding is a common problem for almost every product people we have met. Then we checked out the product. We were aware there were a few tools in the market, but yeah, we saw the gap that we can gain, and we started to build UserGuiding in San Francisco.
So I see you started this company in 2018, right?
Yes.
Before that, now what did you study? What is your background?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Turkey. My degree was in business administration. Yeah. Mohamed and I, my co-founder and CTO, we have been very close friends for almost 18 years. We have studied at the same high school, same university. After university, I started to work as an investment analyst in my university angel investment network. That was a great chance for me to understand fundamentals of entrepreneurship, since I reviewed more than 3,000 business plans, interviewed with 600 entrepreneurs in this company. During those days, we have tried a few ideas together, but all of them failed quickly. Then we decided to quit our job and start building our own company. And to save some capital, to understand the ecosystem a little bit better, we decided to build a technology service company. We call it YNAP Partners. Yeah, we help entrepreneurs build their minimum viable products, acquiring their first customers.
So that first company, was it more of an incubator to allow other founders to start their own companies?
Actually, it was like a startup studio. We have 11 customers and we built their first product, as I said. We also help them to acquire some new customers, help them to raise some money. Yeah,
I think it's like
a startup studio or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. Like, in my opinion, the biggest difference between an incubator and a studio is that in a studio, you are the one who decides the idea, you know, starts the company, brings talent to grow it. While in an incubator, you bring people with the idea, and then you help them grow. But like, it's like different power dynamic and risk profile.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a lot of fun, Carlos. Actually, I really missed our service business days. I know it was very difficult to scale. They have a lot of issues, to solve. But yeah, working with great mind founders every day, trying to help them to solve their problem, owning their problem as your problem, it was a great opportunity for us to grasp the essentials of entrepreneurship before we start our own business.
Totally, and test multiple things. I mean, I think as an investor, it was probably amazing. You were able to see from the outside, not as an operator, how other people are growing and get some ideas, learnings. Then as an operator of a portfolio, also a test. And then I guess you decided to go all in into one of those companies.
Yeah. Actually, it was a case, and I also always suggest our fresh graduate friends who is asking some advices from me. Yeah, if you have no solid, robust idea to start building, you can try to sell some service businesses. Let's start with making some SEO for a technology company. Let's start doing some social media consultancy for other companies. It's also good to understand the building company, hiring people, firing people, creating some invoices, manage the balance, manage the cash flows. It was always my advice for freshly graduate people.
The way I put that, and I've seen that a lot in very successful companies, is a lot of these successful companies, products, they started as services first. And typically founders were the product. And they were able to kind of get enough insights to then try to scale. But there's no replacement for that first interaction, for that first service, if you will. I think it's very risky to go into just building product and thinking about scaling without really testing and feeling the pain of the user.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's all about iteration, Carlos. I also see tens of great founders who try to add some service to their product to increase their average revenue per user, increase the lifetime value of the user.
And another common pitfall I've seen in the evolution of this type of businesses is, first, most product companies actually start as a service. Most of those companies that try to go from service to product fail, mostly because their service is actually a service. It shouldn't be productized. And like, if you are an agency and you are trying to, you know, sell something by the hour, sure, I'm sure there are certain things that you can automate, but there are some things that are just very, very hard to automate. And I think that's the magic of SaaS product, like software as a service. Like, if you can find that opportunity to fully automate that solution, so it doesn't require just charging by the hour.
Yeah. Actually, we were over with our existing clients. If we try to productize what we are serving to our clients, I think, it was not applicable for us. They said, okay, we try to sell a few projects that we are working on it, and it went well. Then we said goodbye to other clients. Then we went to San Francisco and we said, okay, yeah, we are out of this service business for right now. Then we start building user guiding.
So in the case of user guiding, was that an idea that was being created in your studio?
Yeah, Carlos, as I already shared, actually, onboarding was a very, very huge pain in the back in the days. Yeah, we were trying to solve using IntroJS. I'm sure you heard of it before.
What is that?
We were IntroJS, the open source library for creating some onboarding materials. We were trying to find some workaround to solve this issue. And there were some beautiful products back in the days. But Carlos, we were not planning to build the onboarding product before we went to San Francisco because we were not sure how big this problem is. We were just thinking about, okay, yeah, it's a solid problem, but maybe only ventures in your product people are having that. But in San Francisco, whenever we met some new people, they are always talking about some adoption metrics. They're always complaining about their conversion rates, retention rates. And we said, oh my God, yeah, we were trying to solve this issue.
Just to clarify, what is onboarding for you?
Yeah, onboarding in a one sentence, I can talk about it for days, of course. Delivering the value proposition in the simplest and quickest way possible. Yeah, that's the main idea behind user guiding. Yeah, we try to help our clients to make their end users to reach their aha moment more swiftly.
Yeah, and just to add to that, as we're talking about software products, obviously most of the audience are product managers. They are familiar with this pain. We're talking about once that user signs up or creates an account, even if that account is free, onboarding starts there, right? It's trying to accelerate the path to value so that user continues using the product and doesn't drop off before they get to that aha moment.
Yes, Carlos. Actually, let's start from here. Firstly, nobody signs up to your product. To sign up your product, right? They have some problems, they have some issues to solve, they need some help from you, from your product, from your services. Yeah. But we have also a lot of competitors, alternative solutions in online in the world. And you have to deliver your value proposition in maybe 3, 4, maybe 10 minutes. You need to make your end users, yeah, I got it. Yeah, these products will help me to solve these problems in these aspects. Yeah, this is the hardest part of our business because, Carlos, you remember 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when you download a product from the internet, yeah, you can spend 2, 3 hours to understand how you can use it, how you can get benefit from it. But right now, you sign up a product, if you don't understand something, if that's not clear, okay, let's go. User guiding alternatives. I can give 20 alternatives to user guiding. And that's the same for almost every B2B SaaS companies in the world.
In the digital world, like nobody wants to read an instructions manual. I like the whole point of working is like, okay, I'm going to give you a shot as a user, but I have a limited attention span. You need to show me value. I need to start experiencing something delightful. So then I want to continue getting more. Just out of curiosity, want to know what are some of these world-class onboarding experiences that you've seen in other digital products?
Yeah, I think the first one is bubble.io, actually, even though they have not renewed their onboarding process for a while. I think their onboarding experience is still one of the best in the world. Yeah, I remember, Dropbox, Duolingo, actually. Yeah, Duolingo is also doing a great job on their mobile app. Slack is doing really good stuff, especially they're always promoting their chatbots, their automated work. Yeah, these companies are doing real well. In addition to user guiding, of course.
Of course. But let's pick maybe Slack. It's like a very popular tool for a lot of the PMs. What makes that onboarding so special?
Because they're asking some questions when you are signing up to Slack. And yeah, they understand who are you, what kind of purposes you are going to use. And according to your answers, they are personalizing their onboarding process and they are teaching you. And the most important part about Slack's onboarding, they're not pushing you very hard. That's another point about product adoption. Nobody is full anymore. Yeah, you just need to show a few things at one time. You don't need to show everything in the first 5 minutes after the sign up. Yeah, Slack is doing good because they are getting good answers before when you are signing up to Slack. Second one, they are not pushing you really hard. They are showing a few things at the every time. I think they're also doing good this whenever you start talking to Slack, they are giving some very valuable advice to you. For example, when you try to remind yourself something on Slack, flash and remind, yeah, the onboarding process is very clean and smooth.
Yeah, and as a user, as well as an absolute product lover who eats onboarding for breakfast, it's an evolution of this, and I've seen over the years. The very beginning, very few people cared, actually. It was all about driving app downloads or email registrations. Like the whole, like, okay, wait, give me your email, give me your phone number, download. And that used to be associated as a success metric. Obviously, that is not like that anymore. And we see top companies in the world, especially in social media, talking about daily active users. They're not even talking about monthly active users. They are caring about like the people who already and are coming back recurrently. And they're coming back not because those companies are spamming them with push notifications or emails.
Yeah.
Some science to that, but like what's most important is they're coming back because they're finding value.
Yeah. That's the whole point. Yeah. You know, you have a lot of problems, Carlos. You don't need to create more problems for your business, for your daily agenda. You just need to solve your issues. And that's why I am emphasizing again and again. Yeah. If your product doesn't help, nobody cares how beautiful design you have, what kind of messaging, what kind of testimonials do you have in your homepage. And yeah, that's why we always focus on this value proposition delivery to end user.
What? So as we think about the entire life cycle of the user from joining a product and then being onboarded, finding value as fast as possible, why is that step so key? What comes next? What is the business impact?
Yeah, actually the first thing, get the value. And then I can give some examples from user guiding. Yeah, we just want to create some guides first, then embed our JavaScript tracking code. Then Carlos, the second most important thing, create some habits. I'm sure our audience is very familiar, much more than me, to create some habits. It's very, very important. Yeah. You don't want to create some users. They can sign up to your product. They can sign in your product every quarter. You don't want to create these kind of habits, quarterly habits. You need to give some ongoing value. Okay, you show your main value, but you need to create some reasons for people to enter your product, if possible, on a daily basis, if not on a weekly basis. Yeah, that's why we created survey. Okay, you built your onboarding material, then you just need to get some feedback about your new features. You just need to get some feedback about your net promoter score. Then you need to enter user guiding at least weekly basis to read the answers, export the answers, share your teammates.
I think that's a good point. What the success metrics for one company don't always translate to another company. Like maybe in a social network, it makes sense to look at daily active users. But maybe in a car insurance company, you don't need to come back to every single day. The other thing that you mentioned that I think is enabling more product leaders to start paying attention to onboarding is that now there's technology. There's tools like yours that are visual, that are helping people do it. Like before, there wasn't really that much. So teams would need to either create from scratch something that is actually table stakes that hopefully now they can use from a SaaS product and focus more on their specifics instead of trying to build from scratch. But it's also onboarding, it's becoming much more complex, right? As those products evolve and have multiple features, as you think about not just the new user that joined today, but also maybe a user that was with you for a year. And now if you launch a new feature, you also want to think about the onboarding for that new feature, not just onboarding for that new user. So curious to know about how you think through different types of onboarding, depending on the use cases you are trying to push or the customer segment that you are trying to tackle.
Yeah, that's a great question, Carlos. We are always pushing our survey as one of the first steps of our clients' onboarding process, because you can get some answer from your clients. I'm talking about new user onboarding, but I will jump to new feature onboarding as well, new feature promotion as well. And yeah, just use survey. Yeah, if somebody is looking for some specific actions, you don't need to show all the stuff. And in user guiding, you can create these kind of connections between your survey results and next step. The second thing is about feature promotion. And Carlos, as you said, yeah, it's also very important because people become a little bit blind after they enter your product maybe 50 times, 60 times. It's also very important because people are very good at ignoring some emails, some messages. But if you can reach them, if you can get your attention at the right time when they are doing something wrong or when they are doing something right, but they can make it more proper way, in a proper way, that's also very important. That's why we always pushing segmentation for our clients. If somebody has only one container, you don't need to show how to segment their container, right? Because they have only one container. But if somebody has 10 containers, if somebody has 24 different language in their localization page, you have to show some how to cluster their language, their localization settings. New feature adoption is important, but you have to be sure it is the right time, it is the right segment of your plans.
That's why it's become, in my opinion, becoming such a big deal for product leaders, and there's technology to support that. So even after customer segmentation, you can even get to personalization, because now you can see exactly what is each user doing, where they need more help. And it's like, yes, it's good to have some standard templates that will push a certain use case, but not everybody will adopt it at once. And maybe the ones who already adopt it can move on to the next level, and we try to push to adopt another feature, while there are some people that still need more care and different ways to learn about that. And I think that is the key of onboarding. At the end of the day, it's about really getting users to value as fast as possible, and then connecting that with the next steps of this life cycle. Because ultimately, the goal is to increase revenue for those users. And that can only be done if the users love your product. Nobody's going to renew a product that they don't use. You cannot fake an excellent customer experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. People are very busy. They're very busy with their own agenda, with Twitter, TikTok, other social media platforms, news. And yeah, that's why you have to personalize your experience, because yeah, nobody has one more minute to rest on any kind of platform. Yeah.
And so how are you thinking about artificial intelligence in terms of helping users with onboarding?
Yeah, this is the topic we have been discussing for a very long time. And yeah, soon we will also take some actions to how we can enable user guiding with other AI solutions? How can we integrate our existing other AI tools with user guiding? I think there are two aspects. One of them, yeah, they can, AI staff can create some onboarding materials. I think that can be life-changing for all of us. And yeah, they can, you just need to have only one chat bar. You can ask any kind of questions. The AI can show how to do that, how to connect your data, how to connect your platform, how to connect any kind of stuff. I think it will be a very breakthrough for all of the players in the market. The second one, I think we can use AI to make our existing products more clever. We already discussed segmentation, we already discussed personalization. I think we can get some value from existing AI solutions to make user guiding for your product more personalized, more, you remember the wording, sense and response. Yeah. Your product can sense and they can respond before you are even aware, before you are even aware what's going to happen.
And in terms of your own product, what's your vision? How do you see user guiding evolve?
Yeah, we are, from the beginning of this year, we decided to go with B2B SaaS players because their product usage, retention metrics, conversion metrics, LTV, and other critical metrics are much better than the other clients in our portfolio. And we are planning to go to product adoption platform, which B2B SaaS companies can get some feedback about their new features. They can create their feature roadmap prioritization. They can create some new feature adoption materials, promotion materials on user guiding, get some feedback about their existing new features. And yeah, we are dreaming about the ultimate product adoption platform for B2B SaaS companies. And we are also improving our analytics structure. That will be a very important part of our user guiding 2024.
Let's talk about adoption versus onboarding. Mm-hmm. We talked about how we want to be an optimistic adoption platform. What is the difference between adoption and onboarding?
Yeah, onboarding, I think onboarding is a sibling of adoption. Adoption serves for bigger purposes. For example, yeah, you can onboard your new users. But in product adoption, you can also get some feedback about new feature requests, for example. You can also get some feedback about your latest releases. In onboarding, you just need to feel people the moment. In product adoption, you have to all critical product metrics, upsell, conversion, your one metric that matters, rates, your retention rate, your net dollar retention rate, this kind of all critical metrics can be owned by adoption, not only onboarding.
Yeah, I've seen that it going from being literally a product to being a platform and supporting multiple use cases.
Yeah.
I see onboarding as a subset of adoption. One strategic decision that I'm sure you are aware I want to ask is how to go about that evolution from product to platform. I see two different trends in general, and there are pros and cons. One is building and saying, okay, we're going to start expanding our own product. We're going to build some of these different use cases, and it's probably going to take longer. It's probably going to be more expensive, but obviously if it works well, it's just all going to be centralized. Another option that I've seen is integrations with other tools that are covering specific use cases. That gives you speed. That is probably less less effort and less money, since you are not building every single thing. You are building the integrations. Hmm. Obviously, you are not the central player. So, what type of direction are you thinking to take next?
Yeah, we are already investing a lot of time to integrate as much as different platforms with user guiding, because there are some platforms you cannot build in a few years. Yeah, that's why we are integrating user guiding with Amplitude, Mixpanel, HubSupport. Yeah, there is no way to replace these tools in a few decades, I think so. Yeah, but there are also some features that if we would build in-house, that will be much more meaningful for our clients, and it's also make more sense in a financial outcomes wise. Survey, actually, yeah, there are tens of surveys in the market, but if we could create a native survey, now, you know, if you could build it, you know, the every part of your product, you can integrate your old product, and it is much more smarter decision for us. But I really want to answer your questions. I don't think so. Yeah, they are substitutes. We will invest in integration as much as we can, but we also make some bold moves to build some new products under user guiding umbrella.
I think that's part of leadership. Okay, you as a leader are making this hard decisions on here's how we're going to grow the business, and there are pros and cons. It's impossible to please everyone. And in a way, and I know as a founder, it's tempting to go for more, squeezing one more thing into the next the next roadmap, right? I think having the awareness around how we win, how we can double down on what makes you unique and be an easier player to connect with others that are very, very good at other use cases, can give you an edge, at least in the product space. But I've seen that evolve from being no space, literally there were no product tools backing off, like tools for marketers, tools for designers, and now we have our own set of tools. Some players are trying to cover everything and give the ultimate platform, but most players are trying to double down their strengths and make it easy to integrate with others.
Yeah, as you said, yeah, it has some trade-offs, and yeah, I'm very excited for 2024, because they're coming some very, very, very great features for user guide. Yeah, and I think we will be one of the best brands of product people in 2024.
It's a privilege to build for builders, right? And
absolutely,
I love having this time to learn from you and your vision. Thank you so much, Osman.
Yeah, it was a great chance for me to talk about our feature, our product, and our journey. Thanks for having me, Megat.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.